You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Seltzer, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thanks for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining me now is my usual co-host, Mr. Brendan Lear. Brendan, weren't on the show earlier this week. We get you this time around, huh, buddy?
Yeah, it's great. Every time, there's a Pride or a UFC, I get kicked off the show so you can have some marsupial rodent on.
If you weren't sauntering around Western Canada all the time, it seems like every week you're traveling all over the hills and woods and whatnot of Western Canada, that maybe we could get you on after the fights. But priorities, buddy.
It's hardly sauntering, Kels.
It's sauntering.
I got to go to New York City next week.
Really?
Yeah.
Lucky you.
Never been. Is there anything to do there?
I've never been either, but I'd go see a Yankees game if I had the chance.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be doing that.
Very historic stadium. I enjoy baseball as well, but I don't really care to discuss it on an MMA radio show.
All right.
Good show today. We've got a couple of fighters who didn't make it on, or I guess not make it isn't the word, but their fights weren't shown recently on either Ultimate Fight Night or UFC 69. Wilson Gouveia and Marcus Davis, both winning their bouts recently last Saturday and last Thursday. So we're going to have those guys on. Brendan, talk to them about their fights. I actually watched both their fights on UFC On Demand. And I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the other fights you got to see from the undercards that weren't shown. We'll do that at the end of the show. And, we got lots to talk about at the end as well. We got to get your thoughts on Pride, UFC, and then there's a lot going on this weekend as well. So, Brendan, I guess without further ado, we should get to it.
Yeah, we need to solicit some mail as to what the hell there is to do in New York.
Right. That as well. Radio@fcfighter.com. If you have anything to suggest Brendan can do in New York, and Brendan, I think you just asked for some rather insulting emails, but
I only have two criteria: only legal things, so I don't end up in Guantanamo Bay, and that's all. One criteria.
Okay. Stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
When you think mixed martial arts, there's only one name that instills fear. Fedor Emelianenko. Watch two MMA legends when the number one ranked heavyweight fighter Fedor Emelianenko takes on one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the world in Bodog Fight, Fedor Emelianenko versus Matt Lindley. Plus, see Fedor's brother Alexander Emelianenko battle Eric Pele and more Saturday, April 14th, only on pay-per-view. Visit BodogFight.com/PPV for details.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you. It's our pleasure to welcome back to the program Marcus Davis, who's coming off a big win over Pete Spratt this past weekend at UFC 69. The Irish Hand Grenade. Marcus, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I can't complain, thanks.
All right.
First question for you, a couple days removed now from the fight. Overall thoughts, Marcus, on the win over Peter?
Yep, great win. Pete's a tough guy.
You know, early on, you guys, I watched the fight on UFC On Demand today, actually, just this morning, and I recommend people to check that out. There's a few fights from the fights that weren't shown broadcast on the pay-per-view. You can watch those on UFC On Demand, and I always end up plugging that service, it seems. Should ask for money, Marcus. But did you know that fight was up on demand now?
Yeah, I actually checked it out myself this morning. Yeah. And just wanted to, see how it went. Didn't,
going into the fight, there were some people, based on your previous last few bouts where you showed some pretty decent submission skills, some people thought that you might try to win this fight off the ground against Peter. Both you guys, well-known strikers. What was the game plan going in? It seemed like at the beginning that you were still willing to hang with him standing.
Yeah, I mean, my plan originally, well, the whole time, and I stuck to it. I mean, I didn't deter from the plan at all, and that was I wanted to stand with him. I wanted to show everybody I could knock Pete out standing up. But if you watch the fight and you pay attention to the fight, you know, and watch it closely, you know, in the first round, I'm the one that's throwing punches. He tries to kick me, but he doesn't land anything. I jump in, I hit him with shots. He clinches with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't clinch with him because I want to keep punching. He clinches with me, and so I'm at that point when we're in a clinch, I'm not going to let him take me down. So I did throw him to the ground, and then I ended up taking his back and you know, riding his back until the last 10 seconds. Then he turned into me. Then in the second round, you know, I did make the mistake of just circling him a little too much, and I let him kick me twice. But the next time he tried to kick me, I jumped in with shots again, caught him, and we ended up in the clinch again. And, you know, I took him down again. And then, you know, we got back up. And then the next time we ended up on the ground was because he tried to kick me, and I jumped in and I hit him with a short right hook and just barely missed with the left hand, but the short right hook knocked him down.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up back in his guard, and he kept straightening his legs. And so, you know, I'm not going to pass up an opportunity just to end the fight at that point because I was caught. And I was like, well, you know, he's making the mistake of straightening those legs, so I'm going to take him.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Joe Rogan in the first round, there's a couple times where you're standing up over Pete and he's got his legs out, and Rogan, you know, was kind of wondering if you'd possibly go for an ankle lock, and then in fact that's how you ended the fight. Did George Gergel, did you guys train that maneuver a lot at all? There was an interesting, you really torqued that thing really well at the end. It was, you went kind of from straight ankle lock to almost putting pressure on the knee as well from the side. Did you guys train on that a lot, or is that kind of one of those submissions that you've known for a long time?
Well, I mean, I've been training leg locks for a while now. You know, nowhere near, you know, as long as some of the other guys, but, I have been versed. That's like one of my strengths as far as submissions go. My big strengths is with the submissions are the neck cranks, the different types of front chokes, like the guillotine chokes and stuff. I have a bunch of those that I do. And then next would be the leg locks. So those are my strengths as far as submissions go. And George and I, George did work with me on setting up leg locks specifically for this fight, just in case that had come around, if that was one of the issues, where he was going to straighten his legs like that to try to kick me away and keep me away, because, you know, obviously Pete's such a vicious kicker that if he was to kick and straighten his leg, that could have been a potential submission.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the thing with ankle locks and leg locks, it's always one of those things that you have to really kind of, it seems for a fighter, cinch it up fast. Otherwise, the guy has a chance to posture up and pound you from up top if it's not done quickly and appropriately. Out of curiosity, it looked like the ref said something to you afterwards. Was that just because did he think that you didn't release the hold quick enough, or did he say something to you, or was that?
No.
Okay.
No, the referee didn't actually say anything to me that I can remember.
Okay, no. Nice.
Maybe he said good job. I don't know. You know, but no, I didn't get any trouble. I do remember as soon as I got up, somebody did say to me, and I don't know if it was a referee or somebody else came in behind because I didn't hear who it came from. Somebody did say to me to quickly go sit down to have my eye worked on.
Mm. Okay.
So maybe that was the referee that said that. I don't remember. But.
Yeah, no, it seemed like you let go as soon as he jumped in. I just was kind of, it seemed like the referee. But in any case, you mentioned George Gergel and training the leg locks, etc. So tell us a little bit about your training camp, Marcus, and the fact that some people probably don't know. I mean, elaborate a little bit more about the process. How was the experience training with George Gergel?
Kyle was great. George and I are very close. We're good friends. And, you know, it was awesome to go back out and stay with him. I got to go to his new facility. He's got a 13,500 square foot facility. It's got, you know, 100 foot long, grappling mat plus two other, 30 plus feet grappling mats, two other ones on top of that. Plus he's got a full, Sinister Angel cage in there and a raised boxing ring. So, I mean, he's got it all. And he's got, great guys in specialty guys. You know, he's got, Whalen, who's an unbelievable wrestler. He's got Robert Walker, who's a great Muay Thai coach. So, I mean, you know, he's got everything. And then you got George Grigel, who's just phenomenal on the ground and a great fighter himself. Mm-hmm. It was a good camp.
That's three wins in the UFC in a row now, and I believe 8 wins in a row total since your last loss. An impressive streak, Marcus. The last time we had you on the program, I think it was shortly after your win over Force Pets, and you were preparing for Shoni Carter. What were your thoughts looking back on the Shoni Carter fight now that we have you here, a unanimous decision victory? How'd that fight unfold for you, Marcus?
Well, you know, it was, I looked at it, you know, I look back now you know, if I hadn't have had the injury to my thumb, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard, that my thumb actually completely fell off from the wrist. It detached from my hand, and the bone that runs down your hand, it goes into your wrist, and that bone actually, the whole piece slid out and slid down my wrist after I'd knocked him down. So that's why I kind of played it a little safe. I was keeping it on the outside because I was worried that if we did hit the ground again, I was not going to be able to use my hands to hold his wrists or to control his wrists so I wasn't being struck or anything, and it was going to hinder my grappling game. The one thing is that, you know, I basically won a fight against a very experienced veteran using just almost like one tool. I mean, my jab alone, I knocked him down, and I hurt him many times if you watch the fight. Every time I landed that jab, I was hurting him, and that was just my jab, you know. So I think it was great. It was a good a win for me, beating somebody who's got, you know, I have as many fights as he has just losses, and then he's got another 76 wins or whatever it is. So,
yeah.
You know, good win.
Well,
he's got wins over Jason McDonald. He beat Jason McDonald, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He's got good wins. He's got wins over, you know, some big names.
Yeah,
he beat Jason McDonald, Josh Haynes. He's beaten a bunch of guys in the UFC.
Like I mentioned, eight wins in a row. Tell us a little bit about the evolution of Marcus Davis as a fighter. A lot of those wins are submissions versus the Marcus Davis that we saw on The Ultimate Fighter. Marcus, completely different fighter, or more evolved, you'd say?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the biggest thing is that I went from just being a striker who was looking to strike and you know, sprawl and brawl all the time to where I don't really care now. If you want to fight on the ground, then I'll go to the ground and I'll fight you on the ground. If you want to stand, I'll stand up and I'll fight you standing up. So I don't care where the fight goes because I have confidence in both areas. I think that the reason why I'm getting the submissions so much is that before the UFC, of the guys that had seen the show said, oh God, this guy, all I got to do is get him on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was hell bent on trying to get me on the ground, and they were getting me on the ground and I was submitting them. And that's why you see a lot of like guillotine chokes and neck cranks and arm bars. The arm bar was from the guard. The chokes and everything were from the guard. So other than one neck crank, which I did from the top position, but those submissions are mostly because guys are trying to take me down, and then they're getting submitted because they think I'm going to suck on the ground.
And tell us about that process. Has it been for you, Marcus, something that you, you've learned to love? There's some fighters who end up training, whether they're jiu-jitsu guys and start training more on their striking, and some people do it sort of begrudgingly and never really put their heart into it or don't seem to really love the process of learning new skills. And then there's other fighters who really seem to take to it. As an example, Bart Palowski, who started with jiu-jitsu, he told me once on the show that he started training stand-up and boxing and just fell in love with it. And it was like it was something that he really enjoyed as a fighter, as a process. And then there's some other people that I don't want to necessarily name names, but like I said, they seem to have to learn other parts to their game somewhat begrudgingly. And it almost seems like it takes away from what they could be as a fighter. As that process for you, it sounds like you almost get this hint of loving jiu-jitsu, loving learning submissions. Is that something that you've really liked to do, Marcus, over the last few years?
Yes. I mean, I just love this sport, and I love all aspects of the sport. I don't come from a wrestling background at all. But, you know, in that fight, you saw me do a Greco-Roman wrestling throw. I threw Shoney. And then I used an actual jiu-jitsu outside trip to take him down. So, you know, obviously I've been working on my game as a whole. I didn't come from just striking and then just work, you know, jiu-jitsu. I've been working all aspects, the Greco, the freestyle wrestling, a little judo, not a whole lot, but some judo, and then a lot of sambo and jiu-jitsu. And that's just because I just love the sport so much. I love to learn new things. It's always fun to have a new toy or technique that you can use in a fight and pull it off. It's always fun to be able to do that kind of stuff, and I enjoy it. Mm-hmm.
So what's next for Marcus Davis then? Like I said, three fights and wins in a row now in the UFC. The welterweight division is stacked, of course, but what's next for you? Is there some opponents out there that you're eyeing that you need to take on to make it to the next step?
Well, the UFC told me that I'm going to fight in Ireland on June 16th,
okay.
So I will be on that card. They haven't told me who I'm going to fight. They did say it was going to be a step up in competition, so I don't know what that means. So I don't know who it's going to be. I'm looking forward to it because I've never been to Ireland, and obviously my family's from there, from Waterford, Ireland, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to go out there, and I'm excited to fight. As far as somebody who I'd like to fight, I mean, it would be cool, I think, stylistically. Obviously, I haven't achieved everything that this person has, and, this person is a legend out in Japan, but I think a Marcus Davis Gomi fight would be a great fight.
Mm.
He likes to stand up and throw just big shots, and I'd like to get involved in a fight like that, so that's one I think possibly could happen not too long from now anyways. At least I'm hoping. If I keep winning fights and I keep asking for Gomi, and if the UFC has his contract now, maybe I'll get that fight.
Well, let me ask you about that. When we had you on the show before, you talked about your boxing career and the fact that some people sort of shrugged their shoulders a little bit, raised some eyebrows when you made the switch to MMA, and that was several years ago. Look at it now, Marcus. The sport's blowing up with the UFC acquisition of Pride. I mean, it's just going to even get bigger. It's got to be something that no regrets, I'm assuming, the switch from boxing to MMA, Marcus.
Yeah, no, none. Yeah. Boxing became boring, and you're always being protected or whatever. Guys always fight these guys that, that's why in boxing you see guys that are like 40-0 or 30-0 or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't really get tested and stuff a whole lot. And the one fight that I lost in boxing, I got caught. I got a friggin' real severe cut. I always get cut. Like in MMA, I'm cut all the time. Every fight, I win the fight, and I look like I lost the fight. Boxing is now going to be the sport of the past, and mixed martial arts is the sport of the future. It'll continue to grow, and it'll get bigger and bigger and bigger.
you know, you touched on something about fighters being protected, and surprisingly, or somewhat surprisingly to me, there was almost some, not criticism, but some outcry about the fact that George St. Pierre lost to Matt Serra, and more so in the sense that there were some fans on threads and websites, etc., saying that this is an example of why MMA might have problems infiltrating the mainstream and surpassing boxing, because it's so easy to, not easy, but there's so many ways to lose, and that there won't be the kind of story champions that there have been in boxing. Personally, I don't agree with that take on it. I think it makes the sport more exciting because on any given night, anyone can lose. But I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that, Marcus.
Okay, yeah, that is a very good point. Boxing, and this is horrible to compare the two. I'm not saying that they're the same sport, but I'm saying there are similarities in the way that they are marketed. Mm-hmm. And that is boxing and wrestling. Like WWE.
Right.
WWE, they build a champion. You get a guy like John Cena who defends the belt and he's the champion and he does this and he overcomes the evil, you know, the bad guy or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And boxing is a lot like that in that, you know, you get the guy like Floyd Mayweather, who's actually in my eyes a bad guy, and he's playing his part and he's fighting all these guys that you're hoping is going to beat them, like the De La Hoya fight, and you get, you know, good versus evil, and you get all this stuff going on. Where in MMA, it isn't like that. We're all good guys. Rarely is there, you know, once in a while we have somebody that everybody looks at as the bad guy, but it's pretty rare that there's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't matter how good you are. You can be 100-0. You can be, you know, everybody talks about Fedor Emelianenko. He's going to lose a fight. Trust me. He's lost one before. He will lose one someday.
Yeah.
Is he the best right now? Heavyweight? Of course he is. He is the best heavyweight because he hasn't lost for a long time. So that makes him the best. But trust me, there is somebody out there that can beat him, and there's always somebody out there that can beat everybody. And that's the problem, you know. If you go into a fight and you look at it like this is an easy fight or whatever, and other people are saying, oh, there's no chance, which they did with Matt Serra, I'm telling you, there's always a chance. There are too many weapons here. You got punches and elbows and kicks and knees and takedowns and all this stuff's going on at one time. You can't defend it all. You know, it's, the difference is boxing is like a single-shot rifle, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, MMA is like a machine gun, so there's just, it's just, anything can happen.
Well, while we have you here, then, maybe take a seat as a fan, Marcus. What would you like to see happen as far as the title picture in the welterweight division, the division that you compete in? I mean, your aspirations aside for right now, but if you could pick the following matchups for the next few months, in light of the fact Matt Serra is a champion, do you have any sort of preferences?
Well, I think that, what should be done next, I think that Matt Hughes should fight Josh Koscheck. That's what I think.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, he should fight Josh Koscheck, and I think that John Fitch, I think he deserves a shot at Matt Serra. He's been just on a tear.
Yeah.
And he's just been beating guys that are good fighters, good guys, you know, so he deserves a shot. I think Fitch does. And then, you know, George St. Pierre, I think that, you know, he should get the crack at, you know, the winner of either two of those fights or whoever wins the Matt Serra and the Fitch fight or whoever wins with the Hughes fight. I know that, that GSP had mentioned that he was not happy with the way that Matt had acted at the fight, and he wanted to fight Matt again, and that he was going to take it out on him. He was like, I'm not going to talk the talk and say bad things, but I will just, you know, do what I got to do if I get to fight him again. So I don't know.
You talking about Matt Serra or Matt Hughes?
Matt Hughes.
Okay.
He was asked about how he felt in an interview when Matt Hughes laughed and clapped when he had lost.
Oh, okay.
And he said that upset him, but he wasn't going to talk about it. He wasn't going to talk crap, that he was just going to wait until he fought Matt Hughes again, and then he would take it out on him at that time.
Yeah.
So that that's interesting.
Well, I definitely I agree with a lot of what you have to say as far as the title picture, but will that happen? I would, looking at the UFC's history, I would think that, and probably I would suspect that they'll do Matt Hughes, Matt Serra, just because there's some animosity there. Even though I agree with you, John Fitch, he certainly is deserving of a shot. And let me ask you just about that before we let you go then. Do you think sometimes the UFC shoots themselves in the foot a little bit as far as the guys they pick to show on pay-per-views and Ultimate Fight Nights, etc., and sort of relegating other fighters to the fights on UFC On Demand, etc.? And a good example is Yushin Okami. I mean, this guy's been on a tear. I don't think most people thought that he was going to beat Mike Swick, and of course he did, and now there's probably a lot of fans out there not too aware of Yushin Okami.
Right. No, I mean, that guy, like you just mentioned, and that guy has, I know he has a win over Anderson Silva, and I think it was a disqualification win or something.
Yeah, it was.
But he's a tough guy, and he's right there too, and you know, Rich is fighting his way back, and Rich is my friend, so I want him to get his shot. I would like to see him get his shot at Anderson again. You know, this sport, the UFC, is kind of a conglomerate right now, obviously, because they bought Pride, but, you know, you are seeing these other shows are making great strides. Bodog's doing well. IFL's doing well. They don't really, they're a whole different kind of format, but, you know, all these other shows are doing well, and my big thing right now is I just want to see the sport continue to grow, and, you know, I'll finish out my, you know, whatever year or two that I have left in MMA before I retire and, you know, and have some great fights. That's what I care about right now.
Marcus Davis, congrats again on the win over Pete Spratt, and we look forward to you fighting soon in the UFC. It sounds like in Ireland, and I believe that date is June 22nd, if I'm not mistaken, maybe June 16th. But anyways, we look forward to that fight in Ireland, and take care of yourself.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
The best offer MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter Shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight Shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. Enjoying the program now is Wilson Gouveia, who's coming off a big win over Seth Petruzzelli this past weekend. Wilson, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good, man. Thanks. Very good.
My first question for you, Wilson, going into the fight with Seth, what was the game plan, and did you expect that he was going to want to keep the fight standing, that's what he's most well known for?
Yeah, actually with training, you know, I was expecting to throw a lot of high kicks. You know, we train very much, you know, just focus on the high kicks. You know, my coach, we train a lot on the high kicks, focus on the high kicks. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I was expecting him to fight stand up, you know, avoid the ground game always. And so, you know, he did that, you know. He threw a lot of high kicks and, you know, was a good fight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're more than capable standing up. You guys train at all at American Top Team. It looked like you went for the clinch a few times. Did you figure that you'd have the advantage over Seth on the ground?
Yeah, the thing is, well, he surprised me, you know. I'm going to be very honest. He surprised me a lot. I was expecting him to wait for me, you know, to study each other a little more, you know, and he came real hard, you know, tried to push me and kick and throw high and low kicks. And that's why, you know, I put him against the cage and took him down. I watched the fight like a couple times already, and to be honest, I give myself like a 5, you know, between 0 and 10. I didn't like the fight at all. I think I can do way better than that, you know?
Yeah. What were you, can you be a little bit more specific? What about your performance? Were you not happy?
Yeah, I think my performance, I think I can do a lot better in my stand-up game. You know, I don't know if it's because my last fight, you know, before set was Lagos last year. I feel like Dulcie a little bit, maybe, you know, I don't know. But it's hard to explain, but I didn't like my performance at all. I think I could do better. And when I took him down, I was trying to hit me. I forget my jiu-jitsu. I should use my jiu-jitsu, you know, try to mount on him and submit him. You know, I was trying to punch and, you know, throw elbows. And, you know, I didn't like it at all, bro.
Yeah.
Thank the guy that I win, you know, that I win the fight. You know, he gave me the guillotine in the second round.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you.
He made a mistake and I got it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, it looked like you sunk it in really, really fast. He had his right arm in on your left side, but you still were able to sink it in really, really fast. Did that surprise you how quickly he tapped Wilson, or did you know for sure that it was sunk deep?
Well, I was training that kind of guillotine. Every time, everybody in the ATC, they can tell you that. We train a lot, you know, against the cage. And I have a very strong guillotine in that kind of situation, you know. If somebody put me, you know, against the cage, and usually when I defend the takedown, I always put one arm inside there, try to get a guillotine, you know, around the neck and try to get the guillotine. And I have a very strong guillotine in that kind of position.
You're lying?
Once I fell there, then I knew it, you know. He was about to tap. Actually, if you watch the fight, as soon as I start to sit down, he was tapping already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
very tight guillotine.
Yeah, I watched the fight on UFC On Demand. If people want to check it out, you can watch the fight on UFC and that fight on UFC On Demand on the UFC website. Your fight before that, Wilson, against Wes Combs, you got the rear naked choke in the first round. What was that experience like for you, Wilson, to rebound? And I want to ask you a bit more about the Keith Jardine fight, but the win over Wes Combs, what was that like for you, your first win in the UFC?
Oh, man, the feeling's great, you know. It's hard to explain, you know, because we train very much to fight in a big show like UFC. And my first fight was, I was in a lot of pressure, you know, a lot of pressure. Because I say to me, oh, that's my big chance. You know, for the live, you know, millions of people watching, you know, my whole family, friends, everybody's watching, so I gotta make sure that I do a good job of it. But every fighter, every single one, they, before the fight, we keep thinking like, oh my God, I'm gonna get my ass kicked, you know, I'm gonna get knockout. So we gotta try to avoid all this kind of things, you know, my second fight was against, you know, West Combs. And I was off. You know, I did good. You know, I did 3 rounds against, you know, a very, very tough guy, Keith. And I was very comfortable. And West Combs, I'm telling you, man, I fell, you know, he threw like a couple bombs, tried to hit me. And that guy, I think he hits pretty hard because, well, I felt, you know, that when he swinging, I felt like the wind, you know, come after me. And they say, yeah, you know. But, thank you, God, they took him down and submitted him very quick.
The fight with Keith...
The feeling was very good. The feeling was unbelievable.
The fight with Jardine, a lot of people had you most... I mean, I think virtually everybody had you ahead at the beginning of the fight. Wilson, you're doing extremely well. Take us back into that fight. Was that a matter of conditioning? Was it a matter of Jardine just changing up his game plan? Why do you think in the end you were unable to beat Keith?
The thing is, I was hitting him, and I could believe in my eyes because I was throwing, you know, I was kick and I was throwing a lot of hard punches on him, and he was standing in front of me. I said, oh my God, this guy's not gonna go down. You know, I think it was me, it was me. My first round was good, you know, my first round was very good. At the beginning of the second round, I threw a low kick, and he blocked it, mean, my face was clean. You know, the only thing that I got hurt was my foot throwing kicks on him. His face was a mess. And a lot of people told me that, man, come on, how you lost that fight? I think because of the UFC rules. If it was the Pride rules, I won the fight. Everybody knows that. But I think he came, you know, for a loss for, against, I think they stole that fight against Stefan Bonner. And I think they did the same thing to me. They give to him.
Well, let me ask you, with Keith at the time, I mean, obviously he was off the Ultimate Fighter, fairly well-known fighter. And now, since then, he's gone on to beat Forrest Griffin. He's regarded as one of the better light heavyweights in the UFC. Does that affect your outlook on that fight with Keith Wilson? Does it make the loss, although it's obviously disappointing for you, a little bit easier in a sense?
No, like you say, you know, of course, Keith is, bro, believe me, he's, I think he's one of the top guys right now in the dead division. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. He's a very, very, very tough guy. Everybody knows that. And a lot of people were saying, oh, man, he got lucky. He got lucky. He, you know, he beat Forrest because I think he's better than Forrest. That's what I think. And the thing is, I think I look myself in the weight division, I mean, pretty good also because I did a war with him, you know. And my last fight against Seth, I could prove it, but for my next one, I should fight the same way that I fought Keith in the first round for the three rounds. That's how I wanna fight, you know? The same first round, if everybody watches the fight, I wanna be just like the first round for the three rounds. I wanna fight just like that. And I wanna prove and wanna show everybody that I can do that.
Wilson, you only have one loss in your last 3 years. Talk to us a little bit about your evolution as a fighter. You've got a record of 8-4 now, and several wins in a row. And like you said, the close loss to Jardine. Tell us a little bit about your evolution as a fighter, Wilson. When you first got into MMA, were you well developed as far as all rounded ground stand up, or were you more of just a jiu-jitsu practitioner at the time?
No, actually, as soon as I stopped fighting MMA, at the beginning I was a jiu-jitsu, you know, only jiu-jitsu, no kicks, no boxing. And then I decided, oh my God, if I want to do this, I want to do this right. So I got to focus, you know, and the stand-up game, because MMA is not only jiu-jitsu, it's not only boxing. You got to be able to do everything. You know, wrestling, you got to be good in the ground. You got to be good, you know, stand-up. But the thing is, a lot of good guys, like jiu-jitsu guys, as soon as they got hit in the face, and then there you go. You know, there goes the game plan. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, feels different. That's why I focus myself into learning, you know, more boxing. And the last couple of years, I trained a lot of boxing, a lot of Muay Thai. And now I feel, you know, incredible. But the only thing against Keith, I didn't feel anything with Wes. But with Keith, I felt a little bit, you know, my condition. But now, you know, more than ever, I feel focused in my condition. And my condition is great, and I'm going to keep focusing, you know, my stand-up, jiu-jitsu, everything. It has to be everything, bro.
Yeah. Well, take a look at the light heavyweight division then, Wilson. Who would you like to fight, and who do you need to take on in the near future to get your name out there, get your name up in the rankings of the light heavyweight division, do you think?
You know, bro, like I say, in every interview I say that I don't pick my opponents, you know, UFC does, but I really like to fight the best. I really, you know, really like to fight guys like Forrest, like guys like, you know, Stefan, like Tito, you know, Jason Lambert, he's very good. I mean, Babalu. I really like to fight the best because it's not good to keep fighting, of course, winning. But I really like to test myself against a really good guy, like Tito or something like that. Or Chuck. Chuck's not going to fight me because he's the champion. But I really like to, you know, to test myself against a good guy, you know, a very good guy like Tito, I mean, Hashad, you know. Mm-hmm. Because I think if I beat a guy like that, and then, of course, my name is going to be out there and people is going to know, you know, who I am.
What do you think about the Fertitta's purchasing Pride, and it's not unlikely, Van Wilson, that you might have more opportunities to fight other Brazilians, Mauricio Hua, Vanderlei Silva?
I think for the fans, I think it's very good. I think it's going to be good for the sport because UFC, they deal a lot for sports, you know, the fajitas. They did a lot for the MMA, for the sport. And for the fighters, it's going to be good, of course, because we're going to be able to fight each other. You know, guys from Pride is going to fight UFC. Guys from UFC is going to fight in Pride. It's a good opportunity for the fighters also. For me, I mean, I think it's awesome. You know, I'm going to be able to fight in Japan and fight guys, you know, that used to fight in Pride. I think it's very good. And what else I want to say? I want to say something about this also. I think a lot of guys I saw, you know, I hear a lot of guys say, oh, it's not good for the fighters. I think it's good for the fighters, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think for the best and for the fans, because the fans are going to be able to see, you know, like, everybody, like, say, dream matchups, you know, like, now, like, a Minotaur against Randy Couture. It's going to be awesome, you know, to see the both fight in a cage. It's going to be very, very, very nice, you know? But it's best for, I think it's the best for the fans. And second for the fighters.
Yeah, there's no question there's going to be some great matchups we're going to be able to see. Last question for you, Wilson, before we let you go. Any word at all from the UFC, any indication of when you might be fighting again?
My manager, I think he spoke to Joe Silva right after the fight. And he told my manager to tell me that, you know, I got to keep, you know, training. And don't go out of shape, because any moment he can call me. And but I think probably by end of May, beginning of June, because UFC, they have a lot of shows, especially now with Pride or so, they have a lot of shows coming up. So I'm not going to get out of shape. I'm going to still train. You know, I just took this week to rest a little bit, but by next week I'll be in the gym training again. And I think by end of May, beginning of June, I'll be fighting again. I hope so.
Wilson Gouveia, congrats again on the big win, and all the best of luck in the future.
Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Moe must be presented in business letter format, in aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Moe before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, my first question for you, did you get a chance to see either Marcus Davis's or Wilson Gouveia's fights?
I saw them both.
Yeah. You know, and I wanted to hear your thoughts, because I watched a few of the fights, and I can't really remember which ones are from the dark bouts on UFC 69 or the dark bouts off Ultimate Fight Night. But I got to say, man, there was a couple of those fights that most people didn't get to see, and everyone's kind of bitching about UFC 69 being somewhat anticlimactic, or generally some of the fights weren't so entertaining. Brendan, there's a couple fights on those undercards that weren't shown that are amazing. I mean, the Heath Herring-Brad Imes fight, I don't know if you saw that, it was outstanding.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Herring redeemed himself. And that's actually kind of weird that fight wasn't on there, hey? That they would have Huerta fight on the card instead. But I think they're priming themselves for a big push into Mexico and Latin America, so I think they wanted to, I think they wanted to, focus on Latino fighters in a very shameless way. I recall Dana White's post-fight press conference raving about Huerta's fight, and then he said, and then he comes out and says, and he can speak Spanish.
Well, right. I mean, I guess we're all grateful that we got to see that fight, because that fight was insane. But yeah, the Heath Herring and Brad Adams fight was actually really good. And I mean, I've plugged UFC On Demand. This would be like the fourth time now during the show, which is almost sickening. But, I mean, really, and I know what you're going to say. I agree with you. It's too bad that more fights aren't shown on UFC pay-per-views, especially when you consider the $40 price tag. But, yeah, I mean, there's a couple of those fights. And I thought the Wilson Gouveia, Seth Petruzzelli fight was entertaining. I mean, it wasn't extremely long, but it had its moments. And I thought Wilson Gouveia looked good. I think he's someone that people kind of forget about, Brendan, at light heavyweight.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. No, I think he is. I think he is underrated at light heavyweight. It's interesting how there's a lot of, you know, a lot of fighters in the UFC that really go out there and do their job, and they really fly very much under the radar. And then, you know, I guess, yeah, I don't know. They always end up popping up here and there, and people are surprised. But, you know, it's kind of like the same thing as Marquardt. I think the same thing as Fitch. You know, they just kind of go out, win their fights. They don't push people around or get arrested or, you know, fail drug tests. They fly under the radar.
and as well, their fights aren't traditionally shown on the UFC. But I mean, Wilson Gouveia, though, I mean, this is a guy that, and I'm taking nothing away from Nate Marquardt or John Fitch, but Wilson Gouveia, I mean, this is a guy who's an exciting fighter to watch, though. I mean, he's going to try to bring it on its feet, or he's going to try to submit you. So it's not like he's sort of a plodding or methodical fighter that takes guys down and takes his time. I mean, and I personally have, you know, no problem with that kind of style of fighting. But I'm just saying Wilson Gouveia is a guy that's entertaining to watch. And I think after the Keith Jardine fight, he fought Wes Combs and beat him. And I think people sort of, and admittedly even myself to an extent, you know, you kind of forgot about him a little bit.
I have a problem with that style of fighting. And I think people now have sort of realized that they can't do it anymore. So, let's just refer to it as the team punishment style of fighting.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I think I just wanted to clarify that someone like Nate Marquardt, I think if people have actually seen some of his later fights, I wouldn't say that he's one of those kind of fighters. His fight with Dean Lister, he was very proactive, and same thing goes for John Fitch, but...
Fitch is a monster, and it's funny, like, I don't know what they're gonna do with these guys. There's a lot of guys, I think there's a lot of guys, especially at 70, that because the UFC isn't really doesn't really have rankings, and they basically use matchmaking to put together fights that are gonna sell cards. It's tough to work your way up, and you may never ever sort of get that. You know, you're never guaranteed anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So look at Caro, has been in the queue basically for what, two years now.
Yeah.
And you know, Fitch is kind of the same, and you know, burst on the scene and get their title shot. You know, without ever having seen them fight, it's odd. So I wish there was a little bit more. Predictability, and you know, even in 170 is even more confusing now.
Yeah, well, let's get into that. I'd like to hear your thoughts, even though it's a few days removed from the event. I mean, the speculation continues. Brendan, I mean, the fight aside, what do you think the UFC is going to do? I mean, where do you think they're going to put GSP? Are we going to see him fight Matt Hughes? Or are we going to see Matt Hughes versus Sarah? I mean, what do you think the UFC is going to do?
I think you got to think that. I much prefer to see Sarah fight Matt Hughes. I have no interest in watching Sarah GSP 2. I think that's the worst fight that they could put together right now.
I don't think they do that anyways. But
no, I have no interest in seeing that. I think you know, Sarah Matt Hughes is great. Because that's just the obvious one. A lot of bad blood, of course, between the two. So that's just an obvious one. The interesting fight will be to see who they line up with GSP in his next fight back.
Yeah, well, it just seems like there's a variety of opinions. You know, some people think they're going to go maybe Josh Koscheck, Matt Serra right away, which I personally don't think they'll do. Some people are saying they might do Matt Hughes GSP right now. Put someone up against Matt Serra, like John Fitch. Marcus Davis said this in his interview, obviously, that he thought John Fitch deserves a shot. It'll be interesting, but personally, I don't see the UFC having GSP Matt Hughes 3. I think they'd prefer that with one of them being the champion, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think that's their ideal unfolding of events is that Hughes beats Serra and then GSP beats Hughes again.
Yeah, well, I think either way the UFC is going to be happy if it's GSP or Matt Hughes. Personally, I think the UFC would be happy with either one of those guys as champions because they both have a huge following. So.
Oh yeah, I think for sure. So the only unforeseen thing for me is who are they going to? Are they? You know, at 170 is so deep. You can't put GSP up against a can because there are no cans. You know,
mm-hmm.
It would be so obvious to bring someone in we've never heard of at 170 for GSP to fight next. So it depends. You know, I guess they want to put him up against someone who they think he's going to beat. But you know, as was just demonstrated very clearly, you know, anyone can win at 170. I think.
Yeah.
And, all those guys have the skills to. You know, every one of them has potential to beat every other one. So that's good, and this is the way it should be. You know, I don't want to watch. I don't want to watch fights where I'm guaranteed, you know, it's not the ballet. I don't want to know how fights are going to end before I sit down and watch them, so it's great.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think they're going to do with Koscheck? Like, I think it might be too early to give him a title shot, or at least from the UFC's point of view. But that said, if you look around the 170 division, Koscheck beats Diego Sanchez, who most people had ranked in the top three of the UFC welterweight division already. So where does Koscheck figure in? I mean, who do they put Koscheck up against? Possibly someone like John Fitch, or are we going to see like a John Fitch versus Matt Serra?
Well, he can't fight Fitch. I don't think he would ever fight Fitch.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I think, you know, I could see them throwing in Koscheck for a title shot against Serra, maybe, because I think that would be a good looking fight. I don't know. The thing is, it's tough to plan these things out, and I think 170 is the purest division in the sense that it doesn't matter what their plans are, it doesn't matter what their strategies are. Obviously, everything can be unfolded. So it's actually one of the best divisions because it doesn't matter who lines up with whom, it's going to be a good fight. I think there's really no bad fights in there.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about this previously, you and I, as to what would happen if Yushin Okami won. And along the same thread as far as Nate Marquardt and guys that haven't had a lot of their fights shown, and Wombat and I talked about this earlier in the week. But what were your thoughts on Yushin Okami, Brendan? And, I mean, it's another interesting predicament for the UFC that they've got two fighters now, Nate Marquardt and Yushin Okami, at the top of that division, who I would say a lot of the fans aren't terribly familiar with.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think they've got... You know, they got their next couple shots lined up, but I could see Okami going up against someone like McDonald, maybe. Or I could see Swick and McDonald as well.
Yeah.
You know, both those guys coming off losses. That's definitely a fight that could be in the works. But it was really interesting to see Swick. Babe, man, he was demoralized after the first round. I think he basically gave it up right there.
Well,
have you ever heard of anyone coming into their corner saying, "Man, that guy's too strong," or whatever he said? It was so unusual.
Well, the interesting point about that, and I mentioned this to Wombat, is here we go again on UFC On Demand. But people can watch the Yushin Okami Caleb Starnes fight on UFC On Demand, and Caleb Starnes makes a very similar comment, which is overheard in his corner. I can't remember which rounds, but it was kind of a very similar situation where the corner is kind of getting on his case, and then he sort of lashes back at them and says, "Oh, well, no, this guy's crazy strong. It's, you know, that's..."
See what Swick does, because he seemed really, you know, he didn't even... maybe he's just an over-analyzer of his himself or style, but he seemed to be he seemed to almost at the end of that fight to be at wit's end, like... Either I got to go to 170, or I got to just pack on a bunch of pounds, because he just, you know, he just saw real physical limitations, which is interesting, you know. That's very surprising to me.
Well, I would say he is a pretty small middleweight fighter. When you look at guys like Rich Franklin, Jason McDonald, Yushin Okami, he definitely seems to be the smaller of those, some of those more well-known, well, not necessarily well-known, but those fighters that are ranked up in the middleweight division.
And he seemed to be bitterly opposed to cutting weight. He was complaining profusely about cutting for 7 pounds, I think, for one fight. So I think it'll be interesting. I can't see him going to 170, but that's the thing is, in MMA, you know, I don't think you see a lot of guys putting on a lot of muscle from basically lifting weights anymore and having that work to their advantage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get stronger in different ways, but I don't think basically doing a lot of sort of modern good conditioning and good exercise, but you know, just packing on the pounds, I don't think is the answer. Maybe he's got to get a different strength and conditioning coach, and you know, just do some super strong, you know, gorilla workouts, or you got to do those 300 workouts where you flip tractor tires around.
Well, but I mean, maybe Yushin Okami is just exceptionally strong. I mean, let's not forget the fact that Mike Swick's had a ton of success in the UFC middleweight division. So,
well, exactly. You could also have a different game plan that didn't rely on your strength, right? Like,
yeah.
That doesn't mean, you know, that's not going to win a fight for you, being the strongest guy in the ring. It's definitely not the case, so...
And whenever they were standing, I mean, he had Okami pretty much, not whenever, but he had Okami in trouble, significant trouble, a few times, so it wasn't like he got blown out of the water.
No.
Let's get into Pride. I finally got to see some of the fights off that card. You know, I gotta say, and we kind of bitched about this before. The card wasn't. I was kind of not impressed with the lineup for the Pride card for their last show, and maybe there were some limitations there. I'm not sure as far as what Zuffo or the Fertittas wanted, or if they had any say in the card. But that said, Brendan, some notable performances, and the Takamoto Zell Galasic fight. I mean, wow, that was extremely entertaining.
Yeah, that was probably the stinkiest overall Pride card ever, but there were some real gems. That was a great fight. It was a really nice fight to watch. All the Taekwondo people must be happy now that they have a representative in MMA. And
why? I thought Takamoto was judo, not Taekwondo.
No, we're talking about Little Crow Cop.
Oh, Zell Galasic, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, how can you not love the Sokoju fight? It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I almost shit my pants when I watched that.
Yeah, I mean, fairly brief, but I mean, obviously this guy is the real deal. It looks like, I mean, I'd like to see him go up against a really notable wrestler. Arona has good takedowns, but I mean, this guy, if he can keep the fight standing, it just, he's got thunderous power. I mean, that was insane.
That takedown defense was crazy. I couldn't believe it. And the knockout was crazy as well. And Arona's lucky he didn't get badly hurt in that fight, because that ref, I think, basically saved his ass. It looked like Sokoju was going to take his last chance ever advantage of the kicking a downed opponent.
Yeah, the Fujiya fight and the Munson fight, the main event, I guess, I thought wasn't terribly exciting, but. In saying that, I thought Fujiya actually put on a solid performance. He had Munson in some difficulties at a couple periods, a couple points of the fight.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about that fight. And the only freak show fight that may have been of any interest, we don't get to see Butterbean actually winning by Kimura. We don't get to see it.
Zulugino, yeah.
Yeah. Instead, we get to see 2 hours of reflections on. On all the old Pride, it's good to see all the old Pride guys back in there. But they should have had that maybe as a free sort of series wrap up or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I'm kind of pissed off because this weekend, Brendan, we're not for people who have Bell Express, you're going to be able to watch Bodog fight. But for the rest of us who have to rely on Viewer's Choice, which is like a lot of cable outlets, their pay per view comes through Viewer's Choice. That Bodog fight isn't going to be shown until the 21st. And so far, I haven't found any kind of webcasting. I haven't found anything about the fights being streamed on the Bodog Fight site itself. So here's another example, Brendan, where a lot of Canadians are... I mean, I don't know how much interest there is for this card, but personally, I was looking forward to watching it, and now not going to be able to see it live. Hmm. Or at least delay, within the day of delay kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. That thing is... That's an absolute debacle.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they have to do, how long they have to plan ahead, but for them to not get that live, you might as well not. I think you might as well not have your fights on pay-per-view if they're not live.
But I don't think that's Bodog Fight's decision. I mean, there's a few different carriers in the States that are carrying it live or that day of on the 14th. And from what I understand, and I sent an email to Viewer's Choice, and this time I didn't hear back from them, but when I've emailed them before to bitch, and from what I understand from when they get back to me, they seem to indicate that if there's other competition going on that they don't believe it's going to impede, or if there's other things going on that night that mean that they don't believe there's going to be a significant amount of buys for the card, then they delay it. But to me, that makes zero sense, because from what I looked, there was no other significant events that night. And furthermore, like we've said on the show time and time again, who wants to spend $40 on fights that happened a week ago?
It doesn't make any sense at all. I think you might as well spend your time pondering the meaning of the universe as well, trying to figure out what the hell television producers think.
And then on another Canadian television note, the IFL got back to me. and they actually got it back to me a little while ago, and I forgot to bring this up on the show, but they are currently working on signing a deal to get the newer fights, the more recent cards, up on Sportsnet or wherever in Canada. I think some people, and I know, Brennan, you and I have talked about this on the show before, that there's been a couple times where the TV listings seem to indicate that a recent card is going to be on, and then you go and watch it, and it's an actual, like, one of the first IFL events ever. Whereas in the States, they've continually got, they get all the newer events within a couple weeks. But I've been told by the IFL that something, they're trying desperately and quickly to get something in the works so that Canadian fans can see the IFL appear. I mean, for example, the Dragons have fought a couple times, and we can't watch it, and they're fighting this weekend as well, Brendan.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't make any sense at all. But you got to keep in there, Kelsey. Like, Kelsey must spend 6 or 7 hours a day just basically writing letters of complaint. I think only a few hours more than Grandpa Simpson does. So a lot of people have to get back to him about a lot of things.
Right.
Stick it out there, Kelsey.
I can't
remember. Gets the grease. Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
The annoying, irritating wheel. Squeaking, shrieking wheel. Last thing before we let you out of here, Brendan, I don't remember if we actually did a prediction on this, but it's your last chance to get on the public record here, buddy. Fedor or Lindland, who are you taking?
I think it's going to be closer than people think, but how can you not go with Fedor? The last time when I saw the Team Quest, until I see the Team Quest training video featuring those guys hitting tires with sledgehammers, you can't pick against Fedor.
Well, I think
that's the missing key to many people's MMA game.
I agree. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think, but personally, I think Fedor could take a lot out of the fight with Quinton Jackson. Lindland's fight with that and with Quinton Jackson, and he could take a lot away from that fight, I think, if he watches the tape and kind of goes from there. But I think it is going to be closer than a lot of people think, and it's too bad that we're not going to be able to watch it the day of. So on that note, I'm going to go write another angry letter.
You go, girl.
Hey, you watch it now. You mind your manners. Brennan, you have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too, Kels. Bye.